It's now time for your favorite guilty pleasure.
The E2 Books Show.
Check your innocence at the door and welcome two of the men your mama warned you about.
Craig A. Hart and S.J. Varengo.
Well, Scott, we just had a guest on the E2 Books Show that I think might make me lose my job.
I think he might cancel both of us out.
He's replaced both of us at once. Yep. He's the host of his own podcast, Author News Weekly. And what a great guy, interesting guest, great writer. If you got all of those three things, I think it's game over.
Yeah, but certainly makes for a good episode of the E2 Book Show. I'll tell you that much.
I don't think either of us needed to even be there.
Nope, he could have done it all on his own.
I just should have come on and said, ladies and gentlemen, Ari McGee. And then he just start talking.
And then we just sit there and stare for a half hour and figure out how long into the interview before he realizes that neither of us have talked yet or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. He's one of those guys who just the instant he starts talking, not only does he say great things, but he makes you want to listen while he's saying them. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely it does. Yeah, I was like 2 seconds into him coming out, I like him.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's he's got this charisma about him that you instantly like him, unlike you and I, who
really
can walk into a room and it takes us the entire party to convince people not to throw us out.
Right. Cling to the couch for 90 minutes like this.
I ain't going until I get my Horace Duvers.
I want some of that there punch.
I ain't going dressed up in my tuxedo just to get thrown out of the first night. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I even put my cummerbund on facing the right way this time.
Sir, it doesn't go around your head.
It's like, oh, look, it comes with a weightlifting belt.
Did I win WWE?
Well, there goes our hillbilly audience once again. There won't be a single hillbilly watching this show.
Well, the hell with this. Let's just watch our race, shall we?
Sounds good to me.
So the recording has now started, so nothing incriminating everybody, unless that's, or how you roll, that's fine.
So the head is in a bag 5 feet from the tree in your backyard. Shit, we're rolling?
That's right.
Well, welcome everybody back to E2 Books. I'm here with these two lunatics. I'm not sure how I got talked into this. However, we have a special guest today, Ari McGee. Now, Ari, I've been on a podcast of yours a couple of times, so I figured it was high time for you to come on and make me put up with you instead of the other way around, which just seems like that's the way it really is. So thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Ari McGee is the author of several novels in the crime fiction genre, including the Porter series. He lives with his ever-patient wife, who happily reads the first draft of everything he comes up with, and waits supportively when he bangs his head against the wall, hoping ideas fall out. Ari loves to talk with readers about his books, someone else's books, comic books, Denzel Washington's movie, The Book of Eli, Booker T. Washington, a book you had wanted to write in fourth grade but never got around to, booking a flight, problems with your bookie, or any other book-related topic, except book reports. Because screw book reports. Now, Ari, before we get into it, I have a book report due this Friday. Any interest in helping out? Maybe writing a note for my teacher?
I'm willing to forge something for you if it'll help. I'm here for you in that regard. But if you need content, bro, I got nothing for you, brother.
All right.
So I'm looking over your biography, and one of the first things I always do is scan for the obvious lies, because I know a guy whose biography says he was born in 1960 and 2 years later formed a group called the Beatles. So,
yes.
Wait a minute, Scott. What? I think that's your bio.
That's not the point right now.
There's always, there are prodigies that come along once in a generation that can do those kinds of things,
Basically, the only thing I'm doubtful of is the headbanging, because I see no evidence of scarring on your forehead anywhere. So,
well, I'm gentle, and you see, I wore all my hair off
So maybe the evidence is there right before my eyes.
I am nothing if not honest.
Rubbing it on the carpet. All right. Well, Ari, I understand you're a lifelong fan of books, stories, and reading. Does this have anything to do with what fueled your passion for writing?
Well, yeah. You know, I think that when I look back in retrospect, I was kind of always training myself to be an author. You know, in the moment, I didn't know that that's what I was doing. You know, I didn't know that when I was a kid and I was reading everything I could get my hands on, that I was learning, you know, how to put a sentence together and how to tell a story that didn't suck. You know, I bought, you know, all those comic books with every dime I ever had, you know, I didn't realize that I was learning how to hook people in and things like that. But in retrospect, I think that's probably what I was doing, you know?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Just think, if you had thought of it at the time, you could have justified it to your parents. You know? This is all money invested in my career.
Yeah, don't you understand what I'm trying to accomplish here? I'm going to be special, Mom.
Isn't that what every kid says? It's like, No, I'm playing all these. Like, I can already see it in my 6-year-old twin boys playing video games, and they're now into watching streamers play video games. So I just know there's coming a time. Like, you guys need to start doing whatever. Like, no, we're rehearsing for our future as a successful Twitch streamer.
Right. Exactly. I'm going to start a channel, Dad.
Well, then if you argue with them, you're stomping on their dreams.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. You're squelching them, man. And then when they're 30 and they're in a clock tower with a high-powered rifle, it's all because of you, man.
That's right. If only Daddy would have let me watch the streams.
As long as they got well paid for it.
Yeah. I'm all about Do they pay well for murder snipers? I don't know.
I don't know. Well, I have no idea.
Hey, you know what? It's their career. Let them do the research.
That's right.
Let them do the math.
That's right.
But Scott, do you have any follow-ups for Mr. McGee on our previous
really interested on that working with my bookie part.
Yeah.
That could clear up a lot of headaches for me. Yeah. So
your gambling addiction.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was in college, I kind of worked my way through college until I decided to stop going to college. I worked my way through college as a bouncer. And so I was in Tampa in a place called Ybor City. And I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but it's essentially like a grimier version of Bourbon Street. So along 7th Avenue in Tampa, it's just bars and just terrible places all over. And so, you know, I have some thoughts to help you with your bookie, you know, from past experience. And I'm willing to share that with you offline so we don't incriminate ourselves.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. We'll take up that conversation later.
Bouncer. That's interesting. You must have a lot of story. Do any of your experiences as a bouncer make it into your writing?
Almost all of them. When you work in such a target-rich environment with the people that I worked with, the people that I expelled from the club, you know, the locations, some of the physical interactions, given the kinds of books that I write, I think it would be silly for me not to draw on some of those experiences for sure.
Definitely.
What was the scariest situation you faced?
Well, I mean, in the moment, a lot of things didn't seem that bad that were probably a lot worse than, you know, we got shot at a few times. You know, what would happen? Well, I won't say what would happen like it was an all the time thing, but on a couple of occasions, some of the rougher places that we worked didn't have the best clientele. You know, I didn't bounce at the clubs that like your dad went to after work, you know what I mean, to have a pina colada.
Right.
And so people would wait after. And when we'd close up the club, there was a couple of times when people drove by and took shots at us. And, you know, in the moment when you're 20 years old, you think that's okay. You think it makes sense to chase the car down the road.
You're invincible.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like I already, you know, tune this guy up once tonight. I guess he needs some more. You
know? Back for more, eh?
Right, yeah, exactly. He came back with his little friends, you
right,
know what I mean?
Right.
Not good for anybody. So, help. You know, you do dumb things when you're young, and it all makes sense. And in retrospect, you're like, that's just incredibly foolish, but I will use this for fictional novels. You know?
Absolutely. Well, speaking of your writing, you have two major series
for
going.
Sure. You're still to work at in...
Are you interrupting me?
Why not,
I think I, what? I said I started to say something, but the screen froze, so I didn't know if it was going to do that thing where it crammed the whole question into like 0.5 seconds. So what I would like to know right now.
Well, I was talking like very seriously, and you just forged ahead.
That's what I was like, wow. Let's bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how this pays off.
Actually, at the time I did it, it flowed quite naturally, but by the time it actually put it in there. Now, I was just going to say, I worked in a bar when I was in college, and I didn't bounce every night, but there were times when it was needed. There was another body needed at the door.
Sure.
And every time I did it, it was another entry in a series of novels, you know.
Definitely.
Just from that 5-6 hour shift, you could get a full book.
yeah you're not wrong, you're not wrong about that.
Sorry, I can't wait to see all that.
So now I would like to talk.
You just keep on talking. All right. See, this is what happened last week, Scott. I had all these serious questions laid out, and things just went to hell.
Yeah, but that, remember, this is just a roadmap. It's not, you know, just suggestions. And I didn't write any of the questions, so I have no investment in whether it's right or not.
Anyway, so you have two major series going on, the Porter series and the Blackthorn thrillers, but I didn't want to start with the Porter series. Your main character, Porter, as a former federal agent, how and why did he become former?
Well, I mean, I'm not really needing to bury the lead because it kind of it's just kind of instrumental in who he is. Mm-hmm. He was he was a federal agent, right? Worked for Homeland Security and did everything, you know, appropriate, you know, the way that you're supposed to. But he grew disillusioned with the way that justice often plays itself out. And you know, it's not always satisfying. You know, there are people who everyone knows are guilty that are going to get out because of the way that our judicial system is. And so he basically planted evidence on a guy that admitted that he was guilty and was getting out on a technicality. You know, and not to creep you guys out or anything, but you know, it was the guy was a pervert, you know, it was like a child type of situation. Mm-hmm. And you know, Porter doesn't play those games very well. So you know, so that's why he is former now, and now he's free to kind of dispense justice the way that he feels appropriate. So
cool.
As looking over your canon, is there a reason why the main characters tend to exist outside of traditional law enforcement, tend to be more independent?
Yeah. You know, I think that's the kind of stories that I like. Like, I think at the end of the day, you know, I'm fortunate that I've found a readership that likes what I write, because I don't have a big interest in writing things that I don't like to write or read, you know? And so I like the anti-hero, you know, I like the character who's able to utilize his wits and not necessarily the law to accomplish what he wants, you know. Mm-hmm. Those are the characters that resonate with me. I don't think I would do well writing a police procedural, because I don't want to be constrained. You know, there's some people who just need their arm broken to start talking, you know.
Right.
And apparently they frown on that when cops do it. So
I tell you what, no, that's, I mean, that when I was reading the summaries of the books, it reminded me a lot of the Shelby, in a way, the Shelby Alexander thriller series, the one that I write, because he's just known as a fixer. Mm-hmm. He's not beholden to any law enforcement agency. And yeah, one of the reasons I did that was, well, first of all, I don't know enough about police procedure, mm-hmm. I think, to be believable. And I'd probably make a lot of stupid mistakes. But beyond that, yeah, I don't want to be restricted by it.
Right.
There are a lot of fun. And I think, you know, Scott's mm-hmm. series, would you say this kind of falls into the...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. With cleanup crew, yeah. Same thing. My cleanup crew starts out. Uh-oh. It's kind of funny. The story in Beauty of Bucharest, where you basically are finding out that Nicole is an assassin, mm-hmm. and we go from there. But as I wrote the series and learned her backstory and everything, it became way harder to write because it's like, holy crap, she comes from a terrible, terrible life. And now I've got to keep writing about this, you know?
I feel sorry for her.
Yeah.
Well, let's make it worse.
Right, exactly.
And we did.
We were talking with our last week's guest, Tess Thompson, about how sadistic writers are.
Oh, sure. You
know, not only to our readers, because if we can make them cry or lose sleep, be late for work, then that makes us happy, but also how mean we are to our characters.
Sure.
Like some poor schlub throw him into the worst day of his life, and as you said, just gets worse from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think ultimately that's what makes our characters interesting. You know what I mean? There's very little there. Especially in the Porter series, right? Porter is the guy, right? Porter mm-hmm. is the main character. Porter's not dying anytime soon, you know. Spoiler alert: like he gets into these incredible situations, and he's going to triumph. But what makes it interesting is, you know, how is he going to manage to overcome this time? And right. I think that's what's the most interesting part about it. You know, James Bond is going to live through the movie,
right.
But you know, what's he gonna do? You know, how's he gonna win this fight on top of the train? You know,
right. So. Exactly. Yeah, sometimes it's not the why, or it's the how.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
it's just, exactly.
With writing, it's maybe not necessarily which question you're asking in terms of the whole journalistic who, what, why, where, and when, but it's which of those things you make central to your plot. You can, I think, lure people in, a reader in, with pretty much any of those. But the Blackthorn thrillers star a covert named Cherny Clark. Hope I'm pronouncing it that.
You correctly. Did excellent. Excellent.
Un- he's been practicing name. For 4 days, he's been saying.
I was good. Cherny.
Cherny. That's it, man. Exactly. Perfect, man.
By the Zernai. Time he was done, my guts were churning.
But unusual name. Is there any sort of backstory behind the naming of that character?
Yeah, absolutely. So I generally don't do very bizarre names, right? I think it kind of puts people off, like they don't want to learn how to say this, you know, and they don't want to go the whole time thinking maybe they're saying it wrong. And so that's why generally in the book, you know, he just kind of goes by Clark. But his first name is Cherny because his mother's maiden name is Cherny, and so his family named him Cherny, and it kind of all plays together because, you know, his mother was a Russian immigrant who disappeared from his life. And he ends up in Russia doing, you know, spy CIA type stuff, off the books, wet work, mm-hmm. so to speak, and finds out that his mother might not have been who he thought. And so his name kind of gets him into some situations that he wouldn't have normally thought of. You know, he's in a kind of a stranger in a strange place. And when people start finding out who his family is, it's kind of propels him through the book, and he meets some interesting additional family members that kind of put him into trouble, you know. So right. You know, lots of good KGB stuff involved.
Nice.
So
which of the series is your favorite to write, do you think?
So I'll probably never stop writing Porter. I mean, I already know how I want to end the story, you know, way down the line. But I think I slowed my production of the Porter books because I want to probably write a couple Porter books every year forever.
Right.
He's my favorite to write. He's the most like me. He's the easiest character that I have to write because his views on the world are essentially hyperbolic views of my own.
Right.
So that's fun. I like writing Porter the best, but in the interim, you know, I like the Blackthorn series with Clark. They're very different. So like, if you think of I don't know how into comic books you guys are, but Porter is a street level hero. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He's mm-hmm. The Luke Cage or the Daredevil
right.
of the world, you know, and the Blackthorn team is more of the Avengers. You know, they're hopping on jets. They're going to different places. Right. They're kicking, you know, the FSB agents in the face, you know? So ultimately though, I think Porter's my favorite. He's the guy, you know?
So I was assuming that do you find the Porter books easier to write?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. You know, it's fun when you write a protagonist that you don't have to think that hard to write. Like, you guys write a lot of books. You know that there's some people you have to kind of remind yourself, like, I want to get the voice right. You know, mm-hmm. I want to make sure this is what they say. This is what they think. They wouldn't use this word. They wouldn't do this action. Right. And it's not like that with Porter. With Porter, like I said, it's essentially me. And
you'd almost have to try to get him wrong.
Right. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'd have to purposely make the voice wrong. And I'm not that dumb. Like, I'm pretty dumb, you know, but I wouldn't do that. Exactly. So, you know,
did you ever notice halfway through that Porter book, you almost feel like he starts talking like Curly from the Three yeah, Stooges? Yeah.
He's got this Cockney accent and it's just awkward, you know. Everyone's like, he was this cool guy who's punching no everyone in the throat. It. Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna give you some free dialogue. You can use it at where just go with, suddenly in the dark, they heard the dreaded sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
If that doesn't show up in the next, I'm very disappointed.
I'm hard at work on another Porter book. So I'm gonna put nyuk nyuk in there somewhere, and I'm gonna send it to you guys when I do it.
That will go on my wall.
I'm gonna do it, man. I'm gonna do it.
Well, you write mostly thrillers. Sure. You know, most all of us do here.
Yeah.
Is there a reason why you chose that genre?
Well, so I think that all the movies that I watched growing up and all the books that I read and everything and my personality all kind of lended themselves to writing thrillers. You know, it's the easiest story for me to tell is a thriller. Mysteries as well sometimes. And, you know, so I would say the books can kind of jump between mystery and thriller depending on how I feel like writing it. If I want the audience to know more than Porter, I'll make it more of a mystery. You know, I'm kind of showing them some things that he doesn't know and unwrapping things as we go. But what I want the audience and Porter to kind of all know the same thing. And well, you know, I don't know. I don't want to talk myself into a corner, but you know, if I reveal the big bad early, then I'm making it more of a thriller, right? Mm-hmm. So if I tell them who the big bad is, if I show the audience what the big bad's doing, then it's more of a thriller. How are our guys going to deal with this? If I keep the info from the audience and from Porter at the same time, I'm making it more of a mystery, you know? And so the books are all thrillers, but they may have more mystery elements. And, you know, the reason I wrote it to begin with was, you know, Porter's whole shtick is, he finds missing children, right? And, you know, I don't know if you guys know, but like trafficking is actually a really big problem in the country.
Right.
You know, you can't even go into a rest area on the interstate without seeing the posters for, you know, if you see something, say something, and yep. in human trafficking and stuff like that. And so, you know, I used to drive for work, and I would drive past this billboard all the time. And, it was a missing poster for a little girl, right? And I don't know if you guys, there's always a reward and stuff, right? So, like, what's the reward you usually see? Like, $5,000, $10,000, right. $25,000 or something? Well, this one, the reward was $750, right? And so it kind of hit me on a couple levels to wonder, A, you know, who are these people that the best they can do, and I don't say that demeaningly, like,
right,
right, they're scraping
yep.
money together, and the best they could do is $750, and they're desperate to find their child. And the other thing it ticked in my head was, what kind of savage would find someone for $750?
Right.
And from that nugget kind of grew the thrillers that I dropped Porter into. So, you know, that's kind of where all that came from.
That is really cool. Yeah.
But you are so right about the trafficking problem. The human trafficking here. So I live in Iowa, North Liberty, Iowa, small little town hooked up to Iowa City University town. There's a Facebook group that my wife is part of. And there has been a couple instances relatively recently, last few months, where people have reported some dude driving up, seeing their kid, and being like, "Hey, my auntie got something to show you," or something like, "Hey, your mom told me to come get you," or something like that. And of course, the kids are smart enough to actually run home and find their actual mom, tell them what happened.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like Iowa, Main Street, USA.
Yeah.
And you've got these pervs drive. I don't get it. Anything involving a child, that is like, if there's an unforgivable sin, that's it.
Yes. Yes.
Agree.
And Porter makes sure that they are never forgiven for their shenanigans. So,
what do you think makes a good thriller?
Well, I think that there's two ways that you can go. I think you either make the plot so incredibly driving, right? Like it's just pulling people through the story. You know, you work really hard to, you know, end sections of the book very intentionally to drag people to the next chapter.
Right.
You don't open more questions than you answer as you kind of build to a crescendo. I think that's a lot to do with thriller. I think the other thing is having a character that people are invested in, you know, because then they really want to hang around and see what's going on. And then, you know, plot wise, kind of like I mentioned earlier, I think that a thriller lends itself well to having a good villain. You know, like you want to kind of see who is this terrible human being who is pulling these strings or doing what they're doing. And so I think when I write thrillers, if you kind of put all of those elements in like a cauldron together, I can kind of bubble up a good thriller. You know, I make the plot, make the plot strong and driving, make the main character someone that you're very interested in, and then give a really good villain with a really good reason to do what he's doing. And, you know, he doesn't have to be a crazy person. You know, the villains think that they're the hero in their own story.
Right.
You know, they're doing what they're doing. So it's okay to write a bad guy, an antagonist that kind of makes sense, kind of, you know, and maybe you wouldn't do this, but you understand why, you know, in the second Porter book, you know, one of the antagonists, she is the in a family of kind of like meth traffickers, you know what I mean? And so she ends up having to do a lot of things that she doesn't really want to help the family and to get them out of trouble, you know, up to and including, you know, shooting a cop and like all these crazy things are happening. But at the end of the day, everyone's like, man, we really loved her because, you know, it made sense. You know, we don't agree. Like you shouldn't be shooting a cop, right? That's awful. You know? But we understand why she did it. And so I think that's, you know, one of my most popular books is that one with a really strong, you know, character and who has good reasons for doing what she does.
So. Well, that is, I think, a secret. You really hit on it. This one of the secrets to not only a good thriller, but any book to make the antagonist or maybe the non-protagonist, make them just as deep as you would your protagonist, your main character. I think a lot of times, you know, writers understand early on instinctively that they need to put work into their main character, but sometimes the other ones, you know, the other side goes unnoticed a bit.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think it's really almost more important when you're writing a series to really develop your villains because you have time to develop your main character, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, over the course of Craig's series and into the last two where we wrote them together, I mean, Shelby did some major growing up in those last couple of books, you know, and that's not to diminish all the stuff that happened before then, but it was just like all of a sudden at this point in his life, major changes happened, you know.
Yeah, no, you guys are right. And you don't, you know, if my villains tend to be, with the exception of one, in the Porter series at least, they tend to be like, they show up once and then they're kind of done. He kind of deals with them and then they're finished. In the Blackthorn thrillers, it's different. There's an arc that's kind of tying all the books together, and there's one bad, you know, who's pulling the strings. But, you know, if I don't take the time to make them a 3D person instead of just a cutout, then no one's going to care about them, you know? And it's easy to do because, you know, you meet them and they immediately have to be doing messed up stuff.
Right.
But it needs to make sense, you know?
Right. So. Yeah. I mean, I think it's maybe part of the reason why some writers ignore the depth of the antagonist, because sometimes it's more difficult.
Sure.
Yeah. To make them more sympathetic. Sure. As you were talking about in the second book. That's, you know, a genius way of doing it. Now, apart from anything that's written by myself or Scott, what is your favorite thriller book of all time?
Yes. Present company excluded, of course. I have a couple. One of my very favorite books was Without Remorse by Tom Clancy.
That's a great book.
I read it when I was so young, I didn't even realize how much it kind of just leached into me. But, you know, the fact that John Clark, that's why Clark's last name is Clark.
Right.
In my stories, because it was an homage to John Clark before he became John Kelly, you know?
Right.
He was just amazing. I just thought the story of his revenge journey and, you know, just him basically willing to burn everything down to get revenge for the girl that he barely knew was just really amazing. So that's probably my favorite thriller ever. You know, but then I also really like, I don't think it's a thriller, but The Hot Kid by Elmore Leonard. It's kind of like a mystery thriller kind of thing that he did. And it's just amazing. The Hot Kid is so amazing.
If you want to learn dialogue, anything by Elmore Leonard.
Yeah.
The best. No. And honestly, you're not wrong. He's the best at dialogue. And, you know, I think the two things I probably do the best are dialogue and fight scenes. And, you know, when you read Elmore Leonard, you're just like, so I can just have a conversation about whatever and just make it cool. Like, everything doesn't have to be like, oh God, why did you do this to me? Like, right. You know, you read that and you just realize, man, I got a lot to learn. So, you know, Elmore's awesome though.
Yeah. I don't know maybe if you would agree with this sentiment, but I think one of the best ways to learn, well, two good ways to learn how to write. One is to write and the other is to read.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And pay attention when you're reading, you know,
right.
There are things that I've circled back to and read that, now that I read with a critical eye the last 10 years or so, you know, that I've been writing, things stick out differently than they did before. You know, you notice things that you don't. And sometimes it's discouraging. Like, I'll be honest with you. You know, I read one of my favorite non-thriller books is, it's over there on my counter. It's by Neil Gaiman. It's The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman. Okay. The first, if you've never read it, the first chapter of The Graveyard Book is so good, it made me want to stop writing. Like, I read it, and when I was done, I closed it, and I just had to think for a while. I was like, this guy's on some different stuff right now, man. Like, I can't do this. But then, you know, I don't have to do that. So I get to do what I do and make people happy, and he can make me happy, and everything's awesome.
Yeah, I had that reaction when I read the Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller. I read the first sentence, which was, my father was a king and the sons of kings and the son of kings. And I was just like, that's it. I'm done. I'm not reading any more of this book.
Yeah.
That first sentence was as good as any first sentence I've ever read. And I hate her.
Yeah. You know, I know exactly what you mean. And it's, you know, it's amazing sometimes when you appreciate authors when you become an author.
Yeah.
You know, when you're a reader, you like, oh, this is good. This isn't good. Whatever, you know, but you appreciate when people do something excellent. With excellence, you appreciate it that you maybe don't notice before, and then vice versa. You know, there are some people that I really liked when I was younger, and when I go back and I try to read the book, I'm like, oh god, dude, yep. How many adjectives are you that what, how many stop saying like whispered and muttered and like what's happening right now, dude? Why are you doing that? I don't want to look at the limpid pools of his deep blue eyes. Like, stop, what was killing
that?
Me
the guy sent you that I was Ed doing a book edit audiobook, and that was she refuted.
Yeah.
So
right.
You don't need to tell me it was refuted because she literally just said no.
You know? Which is the definition of reputation right there.
Yeah, it's no rough sometimes.
No as it gets.
But yeah, no, I agree, Craig. You gotta write a lot, and if you read, you know, intentionally, you can definitely learn some cool stuff.
So. Yeah. I know at some point in my writing career, when I was reading, I started hearing the phrase come out of my mouth quite often. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
You.
Well, yep. Exactly. And even little stuff like, you know, when I first started writing, you know, I read a Brad Thor book, and the way that he, you know, which I don't, you know, Brad Thor's good. You know, I like old Vince Flynn, you know, better. You know, I think I liked Mitch Rapp a little better than Scott Harvath or whatever. But, you know, when he was done, the way that he structured this book, I was like, oh, that's clever. That's clever. I'm going to have to borrow that, you know? Yep. Like, the way that he's positioning his players around the globe was so interesting. I was like, yeah, I can do something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. You mentioned something. You're writing a book now. Mm. Do you have a release date for that for us? Any breaking news?
No, I wish I did, man. You know, I finished, you know, probably 100,000 words of the newest Clark book. And it's kind of sitting on the shelf right now while I purge myself of any attachment to it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that way I can come back a little later and just be ruthless with it. And so,
kill your darlings.
Exactly. And so in the interim, I'll write another Porter book in the next 6 or 8 weeks, and then I'll put that on the shelf and then go back to the Clark and be very hateful to it and talk about how bad old RA was at writing. And, you know, and then I'll probably make some pre-orders and get them put out there. So
awesome.
I think actually, Craig, after he already revealed there's going to be a yuck yuck in it, asking for more dish on it.
I got greedy. Okay,
dude, it's going to happen, man. You guys think I'm joking. You guys think I'm joking, dude. I'm going to wedge it in there and everyone's going to be like, where did this come from? Like, as long as it makes sense, it's staying, man.
Me and Craig are just going to be rolling on the floor while the rest of the world is like, man.
Well, all right. Thanks so much for being on this show. Yeah, and now that you've come on this show, we should probably let people cleanse their palate by watching a decent show. And you have a podcast, do you not?
I do. I have a podcast with it's called Author News Weekly. We really dug deep for the name. You know, it's with Nick Thacker, Jim Heskett, and Pippa Middleton. Pippa Werner. I always say Pippa Middleton. Right. Dude, we're like so many episodes into it. We're just like dozens of episodes in. And every once in a while, I call her like, I don't know, the Duchess by marriage of whatever they are, you know? And I apologize every time. And she's so gracious. But, you know, and Craig has done us the justice of sitting in on that a couple times for us. And we essentially just we dissect the news that authors would be interested in, you know, things that are coming down the pipe. And we also touch on craft. We touch on, you know, stories and books. And, you know, it's a fun way. It's the kind of thing that if four writers were just sitting around having a beer, I think we would do that. And so we figured we'd record it. And, you know, so Author News Weekly, we hope people get something out of it, you know?
Absolutely. Great show, not just because I've been on it a couple of times. Great show, with or without me.
No, in spite of you having been on it.
Exactly. So find the two. I don't know what the dates are, but whatever two episodes I'm not on, those are good shows. But R.A. McGee, Thrillers, Porter Series, Blackthorn, please check them out, everybody. They're great books. Thank you so much for joining us. R.A., I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
The E2 Books Show.
E2 Books Show.
By Craig A. Hart and S.J. Varengo.